is the podcast to the show. You can listen to or know.
Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk, the Tedcast. Welcome, all Greyhound fans. Welcome, all you sinners from the dog track, and all the AFC Richmond fans around the world. It's the Lasso way round these parts with Coach Coach and Boss. Without further ado, Coach Castleton.
Okay, welcome everybody. Welcome back. We are going to dive right in to Ted Lasso, season 3, episode 12. This is our part 8 of our continuing quest. I am your host, Coach Castleton. With me, as always, is Coach Bishop.
I think about your death every single day. No, I don't. I really don't. But I just wanted to shout out Sassy and her hate-filled screeds toward Rupert, which I just find delicious.
Jesus Christ. That was real dark. Didn't feel good. Not going to lie.
Not good, Bob.
Yikes. Jesus. Who pissed in your punch, Coach? With us is our boss, Emily Chambers.
Oh, man, it's about to get so much darker for you. I really apologize. I need you to brace yourself. Steel yourself right now. Because if you think that is dark, one time I told a man I know who I don't like that his daughter is right to hate him. And that wasn't a joke. His daughter does, in fact, have a problem with him. They do not get along. And I just flat out called out his bullshit. That's why you don't fuck with my friends like that. Because then I have to tell your father that you're right to hate him.
It's a t-shirt.
Jesus Christ.
It's a t-shirt. That's it. It's done. I have so much hate in me, you wouldn't believe it. Done.
He loves it. He loves it.
It gives me...
See, I probably couldn't pull that off. So I just admire you. Like, you know, like to actually say it to someone, like,
to
you
had face.
This hatred coming. Oh, that's... Oh.
Your daughter's right to hate you. Yeah, shouldn't Goals. Have
said
so much.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's it. You're channeling a lot of sassy there. It's good, boss. Some of us can't do it. Some of us are born to do it. Some of us just plain can't. We're going to jump right in where we left off last time, and let's take it away. Will walks into the room, and he says, guys, we've just been sent a care package from Zava. He moves right to the middle sort of stand area where Isaac did the haircut and was also the judge, puts the box down, opens it up, and he gets a big reaction from Danny. What does Danny say, boss?
No, thank you, but no. I will not let him hurt me again.
Okay. Was everyone as tickled by that as I was? Because yeah. I laughed out loud in a room by myself. But okay.
It's so funny. He opens it up and it's t-shirts. And then Colin pulls the card out and reads the card. He says, ooh, there's a card.
Whoa. I'm sorry. I got to slow you down, brother. Because the joke's not done. Danny's joke's not done. No, thank you, but no, I will not let him hurt me again. Ooh, it's t-shirts. Can I have two, please?
Immediately.
Oh, yes.
He immediately backtracks.
Yes.
Probably because he's not angry enough at Zava for hurting him. Maybe
That's
if
right.
he were a little bit angrier, right. if he could hold on to some of his rage, he'd be able to fully get over whatever it is that's happening.
Well, yeah, but boss, you think he's happier with the rage or with two t-shirts? What's better for Danny?
I think he's going to end up with both is going to be the thing.
All right. Well, so that's right. Can I have two t-shirts? Can I have two, please? There's a card, and then Colin reads the card. What does it say, boss?
My brothers, good luck against West Ham. Please enjoy the t-shirts and this avocado from my farm. Never forget, I am always inside you. Zava.
Which, I mean... Right. There's no way that line was written and everybody in the room didn't go, that's what she said.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. Oh, or we can't talk like that at work.
Talk like that at work anymore. Yeah. I was like, really? I'm always inside you? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Always remember, I am Zava. It's have I talked yet about Victoria Beckham's interview with Vogue? It's like 60 questions or something.
I don't think so.
Oh my God. Fucking Posh Spice. God damn it. I love the Spice Girls. Victoria Beckham, AKA Posh Spice, who is now a fashion designer, was in Vogue doing I think it's 60 questions. They ask everybody the same questions. And one of them was, if you could eat dinner with anybody, who would it be? And her response is David Beckham. her husband, the superstar soccer player. Like, what are you talking about? Of all of the people available, I choose to have dinner with my husband. Obviously, I'm picking David Beckham. And it is the best shit I have ever heard from a married couple. Like, who would I pick? My fuck. It's so somehow, it's like a Jamie's kind of, why would I be anybody but me? And that's so psychologically healthy. Yeah. Like, it's so weirdly narcissistic that she would be saying that about her husband, but also you're like, cute, love it. Bex and Posh, go for it. Love you guys.
But also, sure, and everything Isaac you just said about it, but I think it's also interesting that the question we tend to ask each other is, what could you probably never have that you really, really want? Which is fine. I mean, it's a good thought exercise for its own reasons. But why aren't we asking that other question, right? Or why isn't that an answer that we all go, yeah, makes sense. You literally stood up in front of all of us and said you're going to spend the rest of your lives together. I'd hope that you could make it through a goddamn meal.
Yes,
exactly. Right? I mean, it's interesting.
All right, boss, you have a link to that that you can share?
I'll need to find it. Yes, I will look it up and I will post it in the community site.
I would also like to point out, because as I've told you, the show could be a religious text. I'm not going to do it to the world, but I could. Nothing happens by coincidence. You bringing up the Spice Girls just so happens to be Rebecca's first and favorite concert. Just saying. I'm just saying it all comes together. It's like there's a mystical quality to it, is all I'm saying.
First concert, best concert. So yes, Zava sends him a big avocado, big avocado. That's a huge avocado.
That could be like a down Holy payment on a house. With the amount that you should be saving on avocado toast as a millennial, if you just stop eating.
You could
be buying a starter home. The fuck are you doing?
That's right. That's there breakfast for 3 years right there. Show me that, bro. Fucking hell.
Holy guacamole from Jamie. Which I thought was,
holy guacamole.
We're doing it. We're doing that.
Now we got Danny approaching Van Damme from the backside. And what does he say here, boss?
Van Damme, I also got you a gift as a way to say I'm sorry for destroying your face.
For destroying your face.
Wow.
Wow. And what is the gift, boss? I mean, what is the gift, coach?
It's a new mask, and it's really presented, given all we've gone through with the name and the Zorro, it's really presented in a way that feels very much like, and now your scepter, and now your sword, and that, right? Like, we can't even see it at first, and the reveal is when it's already on Van Damme's face.
Yeah, and Isaac gets up, says, you look like a superhero, while he's putting it on, surreptitiously, Roy wheels in a big screen TV in front of the whiteboard. Van Damme turns around and, everyone makes a big deal about it because he looks good. We get this merci frère, which is French for thank you, brother, de nada, mi amigo, which I'm like, oh, this is, I'm going to miss the sort of cultural clash, the mix of cultures here that we get on Ted Lasso. That was nice. It's so rare that we have this on a American television show. So I really like this thing.
I wanted to point out that you could have made a different choice, but they each say the exchange here in their own language. And they understand each other. There's another version of this where Van Damme says, gracias, amigo. And he's right. But I like that.
For sure.
And there's value to that. I'm not. Yes, we want to extend ourselves. And we've watched Jamie do that in several places, specifically with Danny. But there was, for me, there's something cool about. No, I can say it in my language. That's the way I most know it. That's what I'm really trying to say. And you will experience it. Just like Sam getting his chin, right? Like, you don't have to know the quote-unquote language to understand that he is saying, this means a lot to me. Thank you. And I kind of like having that there. Like, they truly get each other at that moment. They could not be speaking the same language and understand each other entirely.
Yeah, it's a very Ted Lasso moment. He says, all right, fellas, hey, let's listen up. Ted walks in. Hey, nice pass, Van Damme. Oh, thanks, coach. From now on, you can call me Zorro. You got it, Zorro. No, it's pronounced Zorro. Oh, because of the mask. I got you. Nice one. Okay. It's nice to see a little closure for the Randy Dohas absurdity. Well, fellas, if you're looking for a pep talk from me, you're in trouble. Because I'm like Michael Flatley. Who's Michael Flatley?
Lord of the Dance.
Yeah, the Lord of the Dance.
I did not know that. I was like, is that supposed to be some like friend of his from where? Like, I did not. Got it. Well, that makes more sense.
Yeah, do you remember the Lord of the Dance, coach?
I do.
His legs flail around on his body as if unattached from the rest of him.
I know a family where the one of the children does the Irish dance, whatever, like goes to like competitions. Like, it's like no fucking around. So I've witnessed more of it than you would imagine. But yes, I do remember a Lord of the Dance now. Yep.
Right, exactly. I'm like Michael Flatley on 11:59 p.m. on St. Patrick's Day. I'm tapped out. We're getting real Ted back here. You know what I mean? Luckily, though, I asked Coach Beard here to make y'all a little something to help inspire and motivate y'all for our final match together. All right? Coach, let it rip. Gather up. And now I was bracing myself because I had a sense that we're going to go down to a nostalgic walk down memory lane.
So you had a feel for this because I thought this was going to work the way the coaches thought it was going to work. And it took me a moment. I mean, we'll describe it as we go, but I was not ahead of this at all. It's funny, but I was not ahead of it.
Yeah. I'm a real sucker because I'm bad at endings. And I think this might be an ADHD thing that we've established. And I wish I knew more about it, but terrible at endings. And so
maybe it's an extension of rejection sensitivity.
I don't know. I think it's anxiety over transitions. Maybe I'm not really sure.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
Apprehension about what comes after the ending of something. But I don't know. But we see this moment here, and walk us through us, coach. What are we seeing here?
So we open up on the signal, the four birds being flipped at Jamie. We've got Sam scoring a goal. Danny scoring on a free kick. You see the guys, now they're dancing out. This is, I believe, when he had – oh, no, this is the Tottenham game. I thought that was the hat trick game. Now we see Isaac. We see when Nate – and that's the picture from the desk, Nate jumping on Ted when they're celebrating. We're really going down some of the key moments. Jamie and Roy fighting out on the field. And part of what's cool is everyone's reacting to each thing, like, and they're like turning to whoever's involved in it, and then we start to go to
there's no judgment. It's just like when they look at Joy when they look at Roy and Jamie fighting, they're both kind of like laughing about it. There's no lingering animosity.
No,
they're sort of over it, if you will, boss.
That's funny, but also I think. Yes, and
she unmutes her mic and my anxiety goes up by 8%.
Well, good. No. Apparently, I've conditioned him to just be terrified as soon as there I start speaking. My work here is done.
There you go. Soil your pantaloons, coach. But yeah. So what's cool for me here is. This feels like an – because we see some things we never saw. We see them in an amusement park. We see them celebrating at certain moments where we were there for those scenes, but we did not see the specific part we are now witnessing. And it gives an additional life to the show and to the relationships and to the way I feel about them, which is like they all exist beyond what I saw. And I've felt that throughout. I've never felt like some shows you sort of feel like people walk off screen and then they start existing again when they walk back on screen. Anyway, the guys get hit very hard, and by the end of it, they are crying. And then we cut to them on the field, and we have voiceover of Arlo describing the fact that they are on the field crying, which is very much being noticed by everyone in the stands. This is not normal. Usually the crying comes after. but here we are. And what's interesting is we've got Beard saying, oh, you know, how does he phrase it? He says, sorry, I lost my spot here. Sorry. Oh, here we go. Sorry, let me pick that up. And we have Beard saying, think we might have blew it with the video, coach. And Ted says, oh, I couldn't disagree more. Ain't that right, Roy? And Roy, who is also crying, and come on, man, right. He's got one feeling, and it has been smashed, says, you fucking smashed it. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. I loved it for a lot of reasons, but I loved it in part because the one space where even when I was a kid, I knew men cried and somehow it was okay there was if they lost a sporting contest of some sort. Then the crying was at least somewhat acceptable. I mean, we're going to tell you to stop. And you should probably put a towel over your head and apologize as you do it. But at the very least, we're not going to like completely toss you out of manhood. I mean, after all, you just lost a game.
It's terrible. It's terrible. I mean, it's terrible. But at least there was one place where, yeah. But I mean, that it's sporting event. I mean,
it's crazy.
Oh my God. And
the things that people say quickly, there's I know a guy who was there. I wasn't on the team at the time, but my old coach was a legend in Brooklyn, blah, blah, blah. And so one day he's telling a story of this game they played. And I guess at the end of it, this guy had like done all, but they'd lost. And when coach told the story, apparently he would always say, cried like a baby, played like a man. And I feel like that's the basic... That's the basic code of the acceptance of the crying in that setting is like, you know, now you've earned the right to have human emotion, but briefly and please contain. But at any rate, they're out on the field now, but they're not crying in a quote unquote cool way or acceptable way. It's before the game. And it's not having anything to do with the outcome of the game. They are being emotional and they are sad because the life they've been living in this lasso way is going to be changed. There's going to be a change now.
Right.
It's the end of this era.
Yep.
And so they are full on crying and everyone's confused. Rebecca, like everywhere you cut, people are like, what is happening right now? Which frankly, I would imagine I would too. Like if a professional sports team just during the anthem was just weeping. I mean, I think I'd be like, what the hell is happening? So, that leads to them, you know, right into the game.
And we jump into the game. It's, you know, there's a lot of jokes about whether you cry during the game or not. We played a quarter of an hour and remained deadlocked. West Ham with the corner. Oh, lovely ball there. And, but saved by Van Damme. So that's all right. I hear he wants to be called Zorro now. To which Arlo says, well, it's about time. Which I was like, yeah, it's three years in the making. You would have seen that coming.
Right. You could have saved us all a lot of time. Yeah.
Right. Funny. Exactly. Then we move on. We advance in the game. Richmond seemed to have settled down. They're on the attack, ticking along with the precision of a Swiss clock with Jamie Tartt as its central cog. Of course, we cut to the stands where Rupert says, like, the other thing that everybody says. So the first thing was jerk face Dr.
Jacob.
Oh, what's his name? Jacob, thank you. Dr. Jacob, who's like, oh, 0-0. That's soccer. And what everyone else says is the tiki-taka. Tiki-taka, tiki-fucking-tedious, which is people who don't like the passing part of the game. But that kind of control is spectacular. Of course, Rupert has learned nothing, surrounded by people who I bet would stab him for a nickel, but not 100% sure.
Probably.
Doesn't look like a lot of close friends or family there. No. In the stands.
They're also devoid of color in terms of the clothing. I mean.
Oh. Yeah. I was going to say, well, they're just British, so they're extremely pasty. That's
funny.
And they don't have a lot of sun. Trickery from Tart. The outside of his boot to Rojas. So close. These guys are playing really well. Danny does a bicycle kick that just misses wide. We see all the reactions. Rebecca, Dr. Sharon, you know, we move to Michelle and Henry. And what does Dr. Jake say here?
It says, well, something happened. Which, I don't know. I think I've already complained about this. It seems like with all of the faults that they have given to Dr. Jacob, I understand why him at the end of the day just being sort of a douche nozzle is going to be the thing that does him in with Michelle. But it felt a little anticlimactic after the big reveal of him being very wildly unprofessional and unethical and seemingly very, very bad at his job and taking advantage of somebody, maybe, like all those things. And it's going to be like, oh, well, you don't understand the beautiful game. So this is why we need to break up. I don't know. It didn't hit for me, but I get it.
Yeah, no.
I hear you on that.
Again, even on a show that we have spent half our lives chronicling, they probably misjudged the importance of professional ethics. Like in this case, like they think they probably took it a little too lightly. Later in an AMA, we read that Brendan Hunt said, oh, they just went with what one person said in the room and that was it. And it was probably an oversight. It's a very serious business here. And, yeah, it is a little eye-rolly that the thing that bugs Michelle is him commenting on soccer, like as if that's not a, you know, this is not tonally, aligned with who he has always been. But Paul, we go to the bar and Paul starts a chant there. Come on, Richmond. Come on, Richmond. Everybody gets really fired up. I was very invested in this because I love the soccer parts of the game. That's all right, fellas. Keep calm and get fired up. That's a riff on, you know, keep calm and carry on. West Ham, ends up scoring first, draws first blood. Rupert is happy about that. There is a, everyone, he's standing and clapping. He thinks he's got it. It is unlike most sports, low scoring sports where you take the first point, give you a disproportionate lead, or a disproportionate amount of pressure. You can change the entirety of your format and how you, the formation of your team. And you can sort of bunker after that and just play for the 1-0 win. But that's not what the team does. They stay in it. Rebecca's like, come on, Richmond. She doesn't want to take it sitting down. Bad moment for the keeper, but that mask is cool as hell. Dr. Sharon's shaking her head. Okay, fellas, let's go, says Ted. And we're at the 38th minute. West Ham are gaining ground. Richmond are playing in reverse. Maybe they're, it looks like, oh man, they're, maybe this, maybe there's, that was a miscalculation with, the cry, the emotional video before the game. And then what happens? It looks like something is popping up on the screen on a bunch of people's phones. And what's going on here, Coach?
So, call back to season one at the end of the season when we are suddenly aware that a tie will get it done. And so we have Nate come up to say, what that might be, what might be buzzing through all these phones in here. And it is that. I lost the line. Sorry. Let's do that again.
No, that Man City has taken the lead over Liverpool. Man City has scored.
There we go. Sorry. I lost my.
And so Now, Coach, all we need is what, a tie here, right?
Well, yeah, and then their fate is not totally in their own hands, as we've established. But yeah, they've gotten this information in now, and it's let's get this tie and at least a tie and put ourselves in position for the good thing to happen.
Now the Hammers are back on the attack. Richmond absolutely cannot concede here, Arlo, and they've conceded 2-0 in the first half. Richmond dreams are in tatters. We go to the Crown and Anchor. Everybody's so frustrated. Even Henry says shit. Michelle says, don't say shit. Jake is on his phone.
I know. They're like, is there anyone left who harbors anything but hatred for this character? Is there anyone?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just one more thing. We're going to have him on his phone while the two of them are hurt. So yeah, it was great. I also thought sometimes we do the right thing and the outcome is not what we want. Like, they are playing total football.
Oh yeah.
They're doing the thing. And I think there's something really powerful about being like, yeah. And then sometimes, you know, like, that's doing all that shit is almost table stakes sometimes. Then the universe takes over. It's like, well, okay. Well, I couldn't have anticipated that, you know, whether it's, you know, whatever it might be. And you just kind of, all right, well, that's how that went.
Well, I would say most of the time. Well, if you're a good person, you try, most of the time you're trying to do the right thing. And things don't go. There's a great line in the movie called The Ref, one of my favorite movies. Watch it every Christmas. And Dennis Leary says, this little kid, welcome to the world where things, most of the time, things don't go your fucking way. And it's like such a wake up call. Just like, oh, like, most of the time they don't? Like, yeah, most of the time.
Yeah.
And so if you're a good person trying to do good in the world, you know, not speaking in binary terms, like someone's good or bad. But if you are attempting to, again, better yourself in the way that Higgins suggested earlier in the episode, and always trying to sort of aim for that, to keep getting better. And yet things often do not go your way.
When I would coach, little thing, but sort of in that vein, I think a little softer version of that, having a little fun with it. But especially kids who were just sort of learning how to play basketball, you know, if they took a good shot, because a good shot, I would explain to them, a good shot is a shot that goes in. The good shot is the right shot. Did you take the right shot for our offense? Right. And so that was always my thing. And if they would if it would rim out or whatever, it was like, you know, nice try. I would say, there's no justice. There's no justice. Y'all came down. Y'all ran the offense. There's no justice in this world. But I saw it. You did it right. Don't worry about it. I saw it. There's no justice. And they would kind of smile and laugh, whatever. But it was my way of saying, like, you got it. You're good. This was not a failure. You did not fail to run the offense. You ran the offense just fine. The shot didn't drop. That's all.
Yeah. No, that's exactly what happens here. They're playing total football. Chris, pal, how would you sum up the first half? Richmond Cinderella story seems to be turning into a big fat pumpkin. Okay, now we move to the Richmond locker room. It's tough going as a pro soccer team going in 2-0 to have. I mean, that is a nearly insurmountable lead. But we've talked about this particular score before, and you coach them up and you say, "Just get one. That's all you need to do." These guys are talking in the locker room, trying to figure out what's going on. There's a lot of strategizing, a lot of people trying to just talk to each other player wise and say, what do we do? Jamie is, Sam, everyone's trying to talk to each other to figure out a better way to actually get back.
By the way, even this conversation has improved. Like, look at how constructive it is. You got guys going, so when I do this, you do that. Even in recent times, like before Jamie said, don't play to me, play through me. It was all, hey, you're fucking this up. You're doing it wrong. No, you're doing it wrong, right? Like, even at that point, they were learning this. They were moving this way, but they weren't here yet. But now they are like, what my coach, one of my different coach used to call solving your problems. Like, he'd just tell us on defense, like, he'd be like, solve your problems. Like, I can't tell you everything that's going to happen and every half a fucking yard some guy might move. Like, you guys have to solve your problems on the field. And I feel like they're doing that here. I think it's a very important element of when a team really gets it, whatever it is you're trying to get them to buy into, when they can solve their problems, when you don't have to say to them, do X, Y, or Z, they can get together and figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. This goes right back to your quote, coach.
There it is.
That's it. Say it for the people who are just joining.
Absolutely. So I don't consider myself, this is from Customato, who trained Mike Tyson, and I don't consider myself a success when I make a guy a champion. I consider myself a success when I make him a champion and independent of me.
And that's it.
That's some real shit right there.
That's what's going on. So Ted walks in, and Beard sees him and yells, "Shut your butts and sit your mouths down." And he goes, "You know what I meant." So Ted gives him a look. "Thanks, coach. Well, fellas, we got our work cut out for us in the second half, but, you know, I'll get to all that in a minute. Now, right now, I want to do is let you gentlemen know what an absolute honor it has been to be your coach. Getting to work with y'all these last 3 years has truly been one of the greatest experiences of my life. I love getting to know each and every single one of you, learning about the men you were, and getting a front row seat to see the men you all have become. And I want to thank you for your patience with me. You know, when I showed up here, I didn't know one thing about soccer, but now I know at least one thing about football." And they like that. I'm just so gosh damn proud to be part of this team, you know, and I love you guys. I'm going to miss y'all. Now, regarding this second half, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. You know what I mean? No one does. Sports would be a lot less fun if we did, you know? And y'all would probably make a lot less money. So, you know, we don't want to know the future. We want to be here right now. I know we're down a couple goals, but I'm telling you, man, if y'all play hard, play smart, play together, and just, you know, do what y'all do, and we'll go out with the peace of mind knowing we did our best, right? That we tried. Yeah? And they all say, "Yes, coach." All right. Anybody else have something to say?
Before we move forward, can we talk about that speech for a minute? Because I just got choked up listening to you read it. So I think that's a pretty strong indication of my experience of it in the first place.
Yeah.
I was like, this is that speech. This is that speech. Like, this is the, like, I am going to bare my soul. We are here now. It is full go time. There's no more tomorrows. And I just love, like, this felt like somebody who has had to stand up in a locker room and give a speech, at least had some input. Because I've been there. I've said to kids, "I don't care what happens in this half. You would go out there, you play with fire in your belly and love in your heart, and we walk off this field with our heads held high." Like, that is an actual thing I have said to groups of kids. And just listening, I was choked up, fired up, all the things listening to him. And I know that ultimately, as we're going to reveal what that last element was. But I hold on to the importance of love in the whole process and in the whole lasso way. And I think it is very significant that in this speech, he says, "And I love you guys." I think that needed to be stated, not understood. In this moment, he needed to say it. No matter what happens out there, I love you, period. We might win, we might lose. I love every guy in this room. And I thought it was humongous that he thought as a coach to make sure that guy said.
I really appreciate Boss staying quiet during the scene. She's just letting us have our boy time. It's so nice, Boss. Thank you.
I'm just over here in my she shed. Is that you guys have your boy time.
Yeah, that's it. And your she shed.
My she cone of silence.
There's a moment where Ted looks up for the believe sign that's not there, but we all know what it is. We all know that moment. He believes that if you play hard, play smart, just do what you do. We'll go out with the peace of mind knowing we did our best. That's a huge part of it.
Coach, go ahead. I thought that was a period, not a comma. Go ahead.
No. Keep going.
I was gonna read this quote, another quote from a famous coach, very much a part of the show, John Wooden. Success is never final, failure is never fatal, and it's courage that counts. And the other thing he said about success is peace of mind, which is a direct result of self-satisfaction in knowing you did your best to become the best you are capable of becoming. And so
we talk about this a lot, and how much, you know, when they say the defining thing about how people get ahead in this world is not grades, it's not whatever, you know, it's effort. You got to go out there and you got to try. And that's been instilled in this team, and it's been instilled in the viewers of Ted Lasso, who got that message, I think, from what they've seen on the screen. And so Ted says, hey, anybody else got anything? Anything got something to say? Sam raises his hand. Silent in the room. No one says anything. I don't know if they're in shock or if they just don't want to believe it or if they're just really trying to absorb the moment, but it's silent other than Ted. Sam, what you got? Sam gets up, stands up, reaches behind the picture in his locker and grabs a tiny piece of yellow paper. Smiles and walks to the center of the room, opens it up, and puts it down.
It feels like Roy knows first what it is. I think by the time Roy looks from Sam to Ted, he's like, oh, wait a minute. I don't know. That was my read of that. Roy's actually ahead of Beard and Ted in terms of getting what's happening. And I guess I take that as I say it out loud now as, yeah, because he was one of the players. He gets these players in a way Ted never will. Ted has his own magic, but he's been in that kit on that bench figuring out what the fuck to do in the second half. He gets them in that way.
I got choked up when I saw this because I knew it was coming once I saw the color.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jamie comes next. He opens up his cavernous.
He opens
up his cavernous cupboard of body spray. Pulls out his out of his book.
Which he book?
Pulls out which book, Coach? You tell me.
The book Ted gave him. He may have tossed it in the garbage, but at some point he went and got it. And it looks like he's using the piece of paper as a bookmark. It doesn't look like it's inside the front cover. I'm not saying he's all the way through the book. He's not very far into the book, it seems. But he went and got that book. So either he went and retrieved the one he made a production out of tossing in the garbage, or he got himself another copy of it.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. Isaac pulls one out of his sleeve. Guys just start reaching around. Bumbercatch and everybody. Everybody's got a little piece of the missing poster that Ted had just looked for. This one's hard for me. This one has me choked up. So, of all the things, I don't know why this was the one. I know you loved this speech. Oh yeah, this one. Yeah, I can barely watch it without having a full breakdown.
No, it's interesting.
I don't know what it is.
It's interesting. And I'm actually curious. I know very considerately boss is letting us trifle around in our little locker room dreamland here. but I wonder if on some, and I'll think about it as we go, I wonder if on some level they've laced the episodes with different kinds of emotional expression and opportunities for that emotional outlet. So that different people and types of people could have their moment. I was watching, you know, random YouTube video, and they were talking about like epic final, you know, series finale moments. And for Ted Lasso, they listed the moment that obviously Coach was most impacted by, which was the singing of So Long Farewell. Try not to cry, Coach. Hold it together. hold it together, Coach. I know you can barely. I know you can barely talk about it. I know you can barely talk. But you know, and I thought, I laughed because I thought, like, oh my god, like that freaking episode, and the thing you pulled out as this like magical moment to compare to MASH is like that. Like I enjoyed it, but even I, right? But I thought, oh well, okay, that may be true. But as you were just describing this moment, I was like, well, maybe that's just a different kind of moment for a different set of eyes. Because this hit me.
Yeah, for sure.
But this, the speech gutted me. Like, completely laid me out. Like, I was like, I didn't want to cry. And so to be, yeah. So interesting that this is the part that
I guess part of it is like, okay, you know, I'm watching this thinking this is the last Ted Lasso episode I'll ever see fresh, new, you know, for the first time. And then I'm like, okay, I anticipated the speech. I didn't anticipate that these guys had taken each piece of the torn up Believe poster, and kept a piece each.
I mean, it's crazy,
that, man. That to me is stunning. It was a great choice. I did not see it coming. No. Boston didn't give a rat's ass about it, but I loved it.
Are you two still fucking doing this? Jesus Christ, enough already. No, I'm playing.
Actually, what I'll say about the scene is it didn't hit me as hard as it hit you guys, obviously. Nothing ever does. But... I liked the. I think we might have discussed this in the rapid response that it mimics the ceramic work where when it's broken you put it back together. I'm not remembering the name right now, but that this was
Kintsugi. Kintsugi, yes, very yes. much. Yeah, very much so.
Torn and then put back together, and that being broken in that way doesn't make it bad or not as good or whatever. That it becomes a different thing. In this different state. Here in the US on Saturday, the newest episode of Doctor Who came out, the one with David Tennant that I've been trying to catch up, but I've been watching Doctor Who in order to see
this. You've been working towards this one.
It came out. I love the shit out of it. There was some hokiness at the end. It's fucking Doctor Who, of course, there's going to be. I thought it was great. One of the other episodes that I just watched this weekend, though, was Peter Capaldi as the Doctor. And one of the things he says to a kid who is scared of the dark, he says, the deep and lovely dark, you would never see the stars without it. And so I think that, like, this moment had some of that for me. That, like, this thing that we think of as being bad is not. The dark might be scary, but also it is the reason why we could see the stars or the moon or anything else. So it's not bad. And saying that it's bad is dismissive and reductive. And so saying that the sign was torn means that it somehow isn't as valuable or isn't as powerful is also wrong. Putting it back together was the thing that made the sign more meaningful. And so I really do like that concept of, like, bad isn't necessarily bad always, that things are more complicated.
Yeah. Than that. Yes. I mean, that is a defining, thematic, through line for this whole show. The Kintsugi thing, the fact that the cracks make it stronger, the fact that the togetherness in the face of the destruction matters, like all of these elements, and maybe nothing. Maybe the most glided past moment of the finale and maybe of the series is when the guys put all the pieces together on the platform there, they kind of shrug and decide, all right, let's put the puzzle back together. And when they do, on one side of the puzzle is Ted and on the other side of the puzzle is Nate. And
yeah, the two people who ripped it up for their own reason and each in their own moment, but the two people who ripped it up.
And Ted is just staring at Nate. Like, See, it does not matter that we rip this up.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many pieces. So I loved about the sign, because I think there's a version of this where Sam says, I save the pieces. And I really mean it when I say, I think there could be a powerful scene that would work that way. And Sam has been as lassofied as anyone through this process, right? But there's something about them deciding individually and collectively, I want a piece. Like, what I imagine is someone went to grab it and someone, like, because Ted didn't rip it up into enough pieces for as many people as had a piece. So they decided, like, okay, it's not going to be up there anymore, but I want a piece of that. And the fact that everybody had it at the ready, like, nobody was like, oh, I got to run out to my car, it's in the glove, you know, it's in the glove box. Like, it was like everybody had it within arm's reach at most. I think there's a lot there. I'm going to do a quick PSA, Coach. I think you'll appreciate this. People malign, and Coach has heard this before. I don't know if I've done a podcast before. People malign participation trophies. It's a thing. Just know that if you do it in my presence, I won't be violent, but I will be verbose. So I hope you didn't plan anything, because we are going to fucking have this out.
We've definitely talked about it on the show, though, for sure.
So quickly, I'll just say that I had a former coach in the last year. I've had a former coach because of one thing I contacted him about, and his child had played for me, and his child has done some amazing stuff and is now like excelling on the college level, like getting named to like all conference teams for their sport. And I made contact about that, and he sent me back a picture of the dog tags I handed out to the whole team at the end of every season. They had a dog tag. It was a school's logo on the front, and on the back it said, "We will fight," which was our chant. I had the kid I told you about, who's like now captain of his football team. When I reached out to him to say how proud I was, now I'm a choke up. He sent me a picture of like four or five of them in his hand, which means he didn't save one of them. He saved all of them. And they were close enough that he was like, oh, I'm going to tell Coach this thing. And he showed me the dog tags. And here's what I'll say, and I'll shut the fuck up about this because I really could go on all day. I promise you, Coach has heard me do it. If an object you have chosen to represent participation in an experience is meaningless, that is not a reflection on the object. That is a reflection on the experience. So why are we giving kids throwaway experiences when we have an opportunity to give them experiences they will cherish enough to save a goofy dog tag I bought in bulk? That's all I'm saying.
Amen, Coach. Amen. I would that more people thought that way. I see it everywhere, and I think that things are changing. So hopefully enough coaches take it seriously that, you know, they are trying to go that direction and give kids a better experience. I've watched it firsthand with you. It's powerful. And then, you know, the closure, this moment of closure with Ted Lasso, where they reconstruct the sign, everybody brings it in. And then, you know, Ted says, there it is, number four, yeah. And everybody, I mean, this is a big moment.
Huge, huge. We've been waiting. We've been looking. We tried to answer it. We've had attempts to answer it.
And Nate can barely hold it together. Nate's basically us watching this.
Like, oh, yeah, no, Nate's a fucking puddle. He's done.
He's trying to keep it together. Our Ted says, all right, bring it in. Hands over the sign.
Mm.
Everybody in there. Nate is with the team right next to Will.
Let us remember that before he took off in his black suit, they all came together and he was so angry he couldn't even pretend to be part of the team anymore. He couldn't even keep up the facade he was supposed to be keeping up. And look at him now.
This is the moment where I was like, I cannot handle this. I can, whatever he's going to say here.
I know.
I am not going to be able to function
as
a human being. I'm like, this is too much that I love about this show.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is the last, like, hands in huddle that we're going to see.
I know. This is definitely a, maybe I should do the dishes moment for me. Like, I was definitely like, oh God, this is a lot, man.
Like, oh yeah, no, I'm a completionist. I can't disengage. I was like fully and on board, but I'm like, oh, this is it over on top of the repositioned sign. Like, the puzzle is patched up and put together. Everybody had a piece. All of the disparate elements of that coming together. The team fully, I needed it so badly when I watched this, because I'm like, they're down 2-0. They're not going to come back. You can't come back from 2-0. But I'm like, they might come back. At this point, if you have this kind of edge in the locker room. Edge.
Belief. I'm just messing with you.
Oh, yeah.
But you're right. Yeah. It is that's the edge, right? Like, I believe in what I can do. I believe in what we can do. And that's a huge edge.
He never says it. So I'm like, okay, maybe the fourth thing is teamwork. Anyway, I'm just kidding. All right. So
that's really funny. I was like, what?
They get the hand. I missed the point totally. They get their hands in. Coach, what does Ted say here?
I know folks like to say there's no place like home. I mean, come on, man. We've been on this Wizard of Oz thing. I mean, it's pretty. I mean, damn, this shit's good. That's true, you know. Man, there ain't a whole lot of other places like AFC Richmond either. Yeah, I was no good. I was no good after this. There was definite pause. Let me just compose myself. Get my ass back together. I'm going to have to talk about this publicly, so I need to pay attention. Can't be watching through tears. This whole moment wrecked me. And I think, yes, sports teams. And I think sports teams, some of what I like about sports is the same thing I like about movies and television shows, and is that there's so much about life that we know. And I think sometimes when we can put it in these, in a crucible of this sort, we can understand it in ways that life can just be kind of unwieldy. And if you've ever just like committed yourself to a group, like this is what we're doing. And in a way, I often feel like the goal, yes, it matters whether you're trying to cure cancer or, you know, solve a trivia question. I get it. But on another level, I'll say it doesn't matter. Like, I think what matters in the way I'm talking about it is that human connection, is that I will give up of myself, is that I will believe, is that I did prepare, is that I know you prepared because we prepared together, right? And the unity of no matter what happens for this next half, we will always be Richmond. And this is the stuff when people are like, oh, athletes get paid too much and there's an overemphasis. And I'm like, yeah, a lot of stuff is true and I get it. And were it so that we paid librarians what they are worth in terms of the value they add, I'm not getting into any of that. But I am saying if you can be a part of a group, a family, a work team, whatever, and get to this point where everybody's hands in all the way, win, lose, or draw, we in this shit together. God, there's no better feeling. Like, literally in the world. My child headed back to school on Saturday. I wasn't crying. You can't prove I was. And I make them huddle. I make the family huddle. I don't give a shit if they think it's corny. I impose my will on this thing. I do, fully. I'm like, and I say it, especially my son, who's like way too cool for that. And I'm like, no, bring it in. Come on, let's go. And it's because I'm like, do not ever forget. This is our team. This is our team, team. Good job. So anyway,
that's beautiful.
It hits hard.
Yeah, you're the cutest.
I'll say quickly after being called the cutest that I have surmised that if God is a woman, heaven is full of garments with full pocket with deep pockets, because I've never seen women happier than when they can say their attire has pockets. And where everything is cute.
Cute. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Deep pockets and cute, man.
Yeah.
If God's a woman, you'll know the minute you get there. Because if you walk into heaven and everybody got pockets and everything is cute, there's your answer.
I
take that as high praise.
Yes. No, definitely. That is in the same vein of a guy I knew who would say that women, when calling something chunky, it depends on what you're talking about. Because like a chunky necklace or chunky heel. Great. If they're calling some other things chunky.
A person.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes. No, it matters. Ooh. A great deal.
I get that.
So Ted says, Captain. And then Isaac says, Richmond on three. Instead of any of the most ridiculous things.
Right.
It's just Richmond on three. One, two, three, Richmond. Hands break. And we see the reveal of the put together believe sign. I my heart skipped a beat. It's so stupid. It's so obvious. And yet, some of the best moves are the most effective. Now the guys come out for the second half and they are inspired. Arliss says the Greyhounds have come out for the second half, looking like the team we've seen win matches in a row, playing a style of football that is as fun to watch as it is to play. Chris says he wishes he was down there.
Want to call out, by the way, it's fun to watch. It's fun to play. It's the opposite of what, Rupert wants, right? Rupert wants, give me a star, someone who is the guy, and he's going to score all the goals because he's a superior guy. And who gives a shit if you have fun? Just beat them, right? We just watched him tell George that.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, these guys are down 2-0 having the goddamn time of their lives.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we open with a big, this huge, crazy high blimp shot of the entire field. Now we see the different people rooting, and Rupert looks nervous for the first time. We get a little pass from Jamie. Danny does some crossovers and cranks a super hard shot off the post. Everybody's dying, then Sam gets the rebound. It's a big save, and then Colin heads it, and everybody thinks it's Sam. It's off the crossbar. People are losing their minds, going up and down, until, of course, Jamie Tartt puts it in the top bins, as they say, top right-hand corner, and people go crazy. Jamie goes and grabs the ball.
When's the last time we saw Jamie grab a ball out of the goal like that?
I think it's when he scored on them.
When he relegated
them. When he was Man City, right? When he relegated
them. When Jamie is doing full Jamie, he is locked in. Everybody else is celebrating and doing whatever they're doing. And when Jamie locks in, there is no world outside those lines. He locks in. And some players are like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, they put the team on their back, Coach.
I put the Ray team Jennings on his back. Too long a story, but we'll do an aside. We'll do an aside in the community so people know that we're crazy, but that actually had a meaning.
The entire front four were involved, and Tartt put it home. This feels like trouble for West Ham, Arlo, Chris says. The one thing they cannot afford to do is let Jamie Tartt get going. Now, and Jamie Tartt's going, folks. This is what's happening. There's this amazing beauty shot of when Jamie runs the ball back to right. Do you see
go,
that, Coach?
You do it. You got it.
No. It is like gorgeous. It is the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Oh yeah. It's the untouchables. It's every fucking heroic moment where the team is going, they're going now. They're not fucking around anymore. Yeah, no, it's great. And who was it? Yeah. It's Sam, Jamie, Danny.
Yeah,
and,
Sam, Jamie,
Colin.
Danny, and Colin. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. That makes sense.
And they just are, this is it. Like things are moving. We cut to Rupert. For fuck's sake, George, do something. Mark him. He's just screaming at himself. You know, like he's up in the stand. What's he, who's he, whatever. Like, you know.
But how many fans, Rupert, and I know I've done it, where you're like, will somebody guard him? And it's like, yeah, that's Michael fucking Jordan, friend. Like, not so simple when you're here. That's Randy Moss. That's, you know, whatever. Like, oh, yeah, somebody should cover that guy. Oh, well, yeah, sure.
Good thought. Make a bionic person exactly who's faster than anybody else. Because like, he's the fastest.
And the best. And the most skilled. And now he's selfless, so we can't even depend on him being a selfish prick. So God help us all. Like, what are we supposed to do?
Exactly. How did Tom Brady win so many Super Bowls, boss?
I know.
And the bastard is great at football.
Do it.
I'm not gonna say he's not good.
That's
not
where I thought
you're
gonna go. Yeah, there you go.
Bastard is good at football. It's just this is the opposite of the Cubs. This is
I am not in the Tom Brady defense business. But yeah, this is what they would say. How you know what he's gonna do? You know he's gonna throw it. Like, I don't understand. Like, mm-hmm. just stop it. Mm-hmm. But it's easier said than done. That is what people do in the stands, coach. You're 100% right. People do it on their couches. Everyone thinks they're the best coach in the world. So they yell at their screens. And now we have Jamie Tartt gets fouled. It's a penalty. Rupert's losing his mind. Richmond have been relentless this half. Now Tartt wins them a chance to equalize. Here we go. That was professional from Tartt. Not quite a dive, but not much of a foul either. Sam, of course, is the one that helps him up. What does Baz say? Screaming. Everyone's losing their minds here, coach. Boss, what does Baz say in the crown and anchor?
He says, yes, Jamie Tartt, you fucking genius.
Phenomenal. So,
everybody's so fired up. And you do know if you're a sports fan, you have these moments where you can feel it.
Yes.
Like, this is all we need. If we can just get this, a win is within sight. One of the best things about sports is somehow how everyone can feel it. You know?
Listen, people say things. Okay. New rant. Okay. So all the time, people talk about like, oh, there's no such thing as momentum, blah, blah, blah. That is fucking bullshit. We are human beings. We are living beings. Momentum is real. Doubt is real. All this shit is real. If you coach or play and you don't respect that, I don't think you'll ever be at the pinnacle. Because you got to understand, like, these things are real. These people are humans. You don't think that they're sitting on the other sideline, down the sideline going, 2-0 felt a lot better than 2-1, I'll tell you that. Yeah. I bet it did.
You're damn right.
And everybody's fucking yelling and screaming, and the best player on the pitch is all fucking fired up, and now his team is too. We are in trouble. And I think, you know.
It's weirdly terrifying.
Oh.
I don't want to say it's like, but if you're on the team that knows that you're being coming, people are coming back against you, like you're ahead, but you can feel it.
You start staring at the clock. Jesus Christ, how long is it going to take for these 10 minutes to tick off? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know, like, oh, shit, like, we are in trouble. Mm-hmm.
So, obviously, it's going to be a free kick, and we know Jamie Tartt's going to take it because he's the best player on the field. And this is it. Jamie Tartt walks to Danny, hands in the ball, goes, knock it in, muchacho. Like, what? What? And then Danny Rojas goes, crush it, Captain. He puts it in Isaac's chest. And Isaac tries to give it, to Colin.
Wait, he tries to give it to Colin. What does Colin say? He says, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. They are playing for their professional fucking lives. And he says, it'll be fun. Like, that's what I'm saying about that whole thing. Like, they are living in a different existence than Rupert. That would be incomprehensible. Like, he doesn't understand what he just watched. Ha, ha, ha. Oh, ha, ha. He's going to take the kick? I'm like, you don't understand. Yeah,
I wouldn't trust him to take an aspirin.
Yeah.
Put him on defense where he belongs.
Where he
belongs.
That's right.
There's That's not, right. This is another racist.
Expand. Anyway. It kind of has that, but it's like, expand who you are. Believe in yourself. We're all going to be other people, right? We're good. That's the thing that happens at practice. We don't put people in boxes. We actually do the opposite of that.
Yes.
It was awesome.
Yes. McAdoo has never taken a penalty his entire career.
I called this, by the way.
You called it?
I called what? I don't want to say it was going to describe it, but I called, but as he put the ball down, I said what was going to happen. Because I remembered they made such a deal about the power of this guy's leg.
Yeah, that's true. This is madness from 18 yards. Everyone's cheering him on. Come on, you got this, bro. And he looks over. And he sees. As if he's not rattled enough, he sees the new dog, the new Earl.
Wearing a helmet.
Yeah, wearing a helmet, right. So he can't be killed by this kick. Okay. So we back up. He takes his steps back, sets the ball up. Everybody's got crossed fingers over on the lasso side. Roy's got, looks like he's broken his fingers to cross them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is silent. Dr. Jake's trying to talk and they shush him. This is McAdoo's moment. If he scores here, the comeback is on. And boom! It looks like he misses. It's gone over the bar and into the stands, which is what everybody would do. That's what the natural thing is that you sky it right over the top.
Right. You got to keep your head down and crank it right through. I have no idea if that's true, but I remember Roy saying it.
You do. That's it. You keep your head down.
I have no idea. Okay,
sure. You pick your head up and ball goes up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the easiest thing in the world to do. You wouldn't believe. You'd think, oh, it's hard to lift the ball. No, it's bouncing and you kick it and you crush it into the stands. It's terrible. But Mike Dean wants a closer look. And then what do we see on the, Rupert is smiling. He thinks this is really funny. And the ref runs right up and sees
a hole in the net. And what I actually said to Daphne, we were watching, I said, oh my God, when they handed him, I said, he's going to put that ball through the back of that net. I was like, he's going to kick that shit so hard. And I was like, how are they going to express how hard he kicked it? And I did say, he's going to put it through the back of that net. When he quote missed, I did think he missed. Like, I thought for that moment, I thought I was
wrong. He missed. For that shot, he missed, telling you.
Yeah, I was like,
that was a shot of him missing.
Yeah.
Because, the angle was, he missed. But it's okay. For the purposes of television, it's beautiful. It's a goal. Everybody goes crazy, of course. Now Rupert freaks out. And we've never seen anything like this. Rupert storms out. The score is 2-2. Everyone's jumping on Isaac. Everybody celebrating from Michelle all the way to the pub, Dr. Sharon. This is unprecedented. What just happened? We need to take another look at that penalty. And then you see that it went through, and the slow motion replay, not only did it go through, but what else did it do, boss?
It hit John Wings Knight right in the face.
There's a souvenir for a lucky fan.
All right, so I want to know reactions to that, because I would feel I'm curious. What were your reactions to that particular coinky dink / joke?
I was only going to say that I like that he picked only the Richmond scarf to wear today instead of whichever team happened to be doing better. So,
City or United, yes, whoever's exactly. Winning. Yeah.
Yeah, good call.
I love it. I can't get enough John Wings Knight. I would watch John Wings Knight like web series if you That's just funny. Showed him being a dumbass everywhere. He's such a knob. So I liked it. I'm fine with a little John Wings Knight callback. And he seems energized by it. He's got blood all over his face. How did it land for you, Coach?
I mean, it made me laugh. I thought, like, all right, you're really pushing it. Like, it was like, I'm totally gonna allow it, and you're really pushing it, right? That it was Wings Night of all people, but I went from that sort of I'll allow it moment to, oh my God, brilliant, when Babs lost her shit, not over the goal, but over the blood. But I was like, okay, then we're good. We're back on track. I let's move on. That was yeah, I mean, so
over
funny
the blood, over the blood, and then also John Wayne's Knight kisses his lady, yes, and gets blood all over her face. It's so there's such
ring a ding ding. I mean, they are perfect for each other.
I was going to say they're birds of a feather. You know, that's how you know it's real. That would never have. Imagine him trying to kiss Rebecca.
Are you bloody kidding? Yeah, no, no.
He's fine. He's fine. Don't you dare settle for fine.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. Now we have Lord Vader walking on the field. It's like complete with John Woo wind effects on his overcoat. You know.
Yeah.
He is walking onto the field. Oh, this is so good. When Rebecca sees that, just like I said, when she's like, he's going to be his own worst enemy. And when does Rebecca do, boss? When she sees him on the field, what does she do?
She
kind of just has a little look, like she notices it. She very literally is looking down at him and then smiles and adjusts herself. Like,
closes her eyes, no?
I thought she was looking down.
Oh, you might be right. You know what? That might be right.
She doesn't seem thrilled about it. She seems like it's not going to be great. But she like rolls her eyes, sort of. Yeah,
for sure.
No, I think I thought she fully closes her eyes. Like, here we go. He's his own worst enemy. Here comes the clown parade. He cannot leave well
enough. Right. He cannot help himself. He cannot help himself.
Nope. It's a compulsion to fuck himself in front of everybody, and that's what's about to happen. He storms onto the field. Even Beard is noticing. He's like, look what's happening over here. Rupert.
I mean, think about how everybody reacted when Ted went the other way. Like, this is really weird. Like, I mean, like, even I've watched sports a long time. If an owner, like, really came down to the bench in any major sport that I can think of to confront the coach in real time during a game, it'd be like, hey, dude, Your meds. What is happening right now?
I've never seen it. I've been a sports fan for half a century. I've never seen it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, yes, more generally, I grew up in the Steinbrenner era, and those of you who don't know, boy, that guy was a walking sideshow.
That's somebody you should hate, boss. There you go.
I can hate him too.
That's worth it. There's
plenty enough hate to go around. But yeah, so anyway, watching him walk out on that field, I'm with you. I thought that Rebecca was like, and here we go.
Yeah.
And he doesn't disappoint. Here we go.
And boss, what does he do? He walks up to, right up to the backside. Nate watches him go by. Everybody watches him go by. Goes right up to the backside of George Kartrick. Hang on, Rupert Mannion's in the pitch, and he's in the dugout. And what does he do, boss?
Shouts, "What are you doing? What the fuck are you doing?" And George is like, "What are you talking about?" And he's basically yelling at him on the field in front of all of his players, showing absolutely no respect. Tart's out there doing whatever the fuck he wants. Go take him out is essentially what he's shouting, but you've got two players on him already. Take him out. Like, there's some back and forth about
he's like, I've got two players.
George says that. Yes. That he's trying to explain. Like, this is the opposite of what Coach was saying before about how you trust your team. You trust your players to go out there and know what they're supposed to do. This is
100%.
The owner coming down to tell the coach that the coach is doing it wrong because the players aren't doing it right. Like, whatever the opposite of total football is this.
That's, yeah. Yeah, actually. It is the opposite of, that's 100%.
Like, there's absolutely no trust in his team, no trust in his coach. no joy in the game whatsoever. What he's saying is go out there and physically assault Jamie Tart during this game.
I mean, Jesus. Think about it.
To the point where Rupert physically attacks George Kartrick, pushes him over, if he doesn't actually hit him in the face.
Now, wait, this is a key element here. He says take him out.
Yes,
He's like, take Jamie out of the game.
Yes.
What George is like, even George, who is
he's like, all right, this is my stop freak on the patriarchy train. Gotta go.
No, I think he's just like at the very least, he makes his profession in sports.
Right.
And he knows where the biggest line is, where he's like, are you joking? Like, you gotta be kidding me, man. Like, what are you?
But it's so awful. I mean, there are stories and you'll never fully know if people meant to hurt you. You know, you just, a lot of times just don't know. But think about, we talked about Rebecca trying to get him to behave in a certain way in terms of his marriage, but she also gave him an opportunity to take a new look at the game and to take a new look at his team and why they are doing the things they are doing and who they are doing these things for. She has gotten to where she wants Richmond to win because she wants Richmond to win. This is still for Rupert, or now in a new way, actually, because he was fine with the mediocrity before. But this is now a full-on proxy war. And so he cannot allow the game to be the game at all. Like, I'm all for taking shit personal. I'll make up a vendetta. I know there are athletes who've done that. I've manufactured not liking some coach if I felt like my kids needed some reason to get fired up. I'm not above it. But that's different than, you know, like, let's literally try to, like, hurt somebody. It's so far outside the spirit of the game that she said to them, hey, before you guys go off and create your little billionaires club, don't forget that somewhere there's a kid who can't afford to go into the game and who is going to risk getting pummeled by a security guard just to catch a glimpse of their favorite team. And instead of being fully reminded of that and continuing to behave in a new way, Rupert's like fully on the dark side here.
Yeah, he's totally gone off the deep end. Are you joking? Get rid of him. This is remarkable. Rupert Mannion remonstrating his own manager on the pitch. You don't see this very often. What's he doing? Well, not since the invention of telephones, at least.
Which is the other thing. Rupert is, there are phones in the dugout. I'm sure if he really needed to say something, there was a better way even then.
Everybody's watching this and it's like, it's uncomfortable and I'm not playing the game like that. George Kartrick says, you do what I say or you're done. And to his credit, the only time I'll say that,
right.
he is a total dick in every single way. But he says, do it or you're done. And, you know, we saw him lobbying for this job, talking about how great Rupert Mannion was. You know, talk about karma.
Right.
You know, be careful what you wish for if you're a fucking barely hidden bigot hiding in plain sight. He says, fuck off. And Rupert does what, boss?
Pushes him right to the ground. Shoves him.
Yeah. Shows him over.
It's a really bad look. Like, it's, first of all, we're adults, right? So, like, okay. But also, it's such a bullshit thing to do when you're the billionaire. Like, if George and Ted got into some kind of argument, or even to make it more believable, Beard, it's like, come on. It's like, come on, guys, like, break it up. You know, let's not do this. But when you're in that level of power to come push him, like, what's George going to do? Is George going to get up and knock you the fuck out? Not if he wants to, you know, live anywhere but in a cardboard box the rest of his days. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, not if he doesn't want to be, like, sued within an inch of his life.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, it's such a bullshit bully move. But anyway.
Yeah, he's a bully. Yeah. He's a bully. He goes down. Are ugly scenes at Nelson Road. Chris says, Reuben Manion's nuts. And then we get a shot of a pixelated shot.
That was so.
And George Kartrex.
All right, have fun, guys. Have your fun.
It's a good button. Oh, hey, ref, there's three balls on the field. Everyone's enjoying themselves. Rebecca is, again, just like you look at her face compared to everyone else's. She just knew he was going to do this or whatever. George Kartrick stands there, lays there on the thing. Rupert says, get up, yells at him to get up, get up. Disco helps him up. And Mike Dean comes back, says, all right, the net is fixed. The stoppage in play was to fix the net.
Right.
And so, all right, gents, let's go. We're back. George, put him away.
Phenomenal. Just come on. Mike Dean is so funny. Like, there's nothing that makes him flap. He is unflappable. Mike Dean, don't flap, man. You can call him. What did Nate say to him? You dickless wonder. Take the shit out of your eyes. You dickless wonder. Like, it doesn't, like, nothing phases him. He has seen it all. Put him away. All right, play on. He doesn't even hang out to make sure it happens. Like, no big deal.
Put your nuts away.
See you later.
It's a decree. George puts him away. George gets the guys back on the field. He's trying to, Hearts of Lions, boys. He's trying to get his players charged up. And Rupert walks away. And then a complete bookend on a very key moment. And here's the boss moment. Jesus Christ. Look at how sassy.
Yes.
Right? They all start. What happens is they all start chanting wanker at Rupert Manion.
Woof.
Yeah. And Sassy's talk about delighted. How the
mighty have fallen. Oh, she's beside herself. She starts to like stand up. Like, yeah. She's like so fired up.
Her eyes light up. She can barely
stay in her seat.
Yeah, she loves it. She loves it as much as Babs loves the violence. It's great.
There are a couple pieces here. One being, we've gone from no matter what he does, they love him. And while I don't think the world has moved or does move quite as quickly as we are now experiencing through a show, I think it's very telling that we start out with the new manhood being booed and not accepted. And by the end, it's a rejection of the old manhood. And it's no longer true that no matter what he does. By the way, I heard you were fucking your assistant and you divorced another wife. You're full of shit, man. Like, they are on him. Like, they are on to him in a way. They're not going to be any new Rebecca articles this time. Like, I think this is supposed to signal a cultural shift. And again, I don't believe that in, you know, 2 to 3 seasons of football, you're going to have this kind. But I think in the context of the show, that is what's happening, where it's like, yeah, we're done with this version. We're done with this icon, this avatar, as you describe your coach.
Yeah, it is. We're through. We have all advanced. Kicking and screaming. For most of the troglodytes in the stadium, but we come back into play. Ever since match resumed, West Ham have had all the momentum. They're pinging this around, and Richmond can't get the ball off them. A lob into the box, and so this is we're seeing that Richmond's a little flat-footed. A lob into the box, Zero knocks it. Oh no! We get a shot. The Hammers pounce back into the mix. And they get they get the go ahead goal. It's 3-2. Heaven for the Hammers, heartbreak for the home side. Everybody's, all the West Ham fans are freaking out. They're so excited. All the Richmond fans are groaning. And then Roy looks at Ted. He's fine. He's laughing. Why is he laughing, Coach?
Because fellas offside. So yeah. Great. So great. I didn't see that payoff coming in the least. 14 was offside, and he's right. He's 100% right. And so there's so much to love about it. But Ted, you know, we've said throughout, and I will stand by this, Ted, Theodore Ted Lasso, has got all the ADHD. Like, you don't talk about the quit and the hate. He's got all the ADHD in there. And I think it's really interesting that he just has to get things. Right? Like, he's not going to fly over there reading a book because he wasn't going to learn it like that anyway. But once he got over there and he learned, don't call it soccer, call it football. That's what they call it. That's how you create. That's the relationship around this game. Where, like, he has to get things. So he's going to taste his barbecue sauce and he's going to figure out with the triangle and all the things he's got in his life, oh shit, here's how we can run the offense. That's what he has to do. It's not a head thing. It's almost a spiritual thing when he really learns things.
I used to have a teacher who would say, what's the hardest part of getting something?
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be like, getting it.
Yeah. And you go, oh, yeah.
The getting. You know, like, it's like when you ride a bike, the hardest part of it is trying to get it. Where you go, oh, now I got it. That until you get it, you don't have it. You haven't gotten it. So he's like, that's the hardest part. Once you get it, now it's a whole different thing. But the getting it is the tough part. But that's still what you strive for. We check the replay. Goal is disallowed. We get a really, really nice bookend, which is Beard paying off Ted with a little $5 bill. They do that little two-finger shake again, like a bet, with the explosion, the poof, when they shake. And Ted holds it up to check. He says, it's not counterfeit. And he goes, not a reflection on you.
Didn't you want to unpack that? Like, I was like, what? Like, it was like, no. Okay.
At this stage, it's like the chances of Beard possibly having or making counterfeit money, like, who knows? This is how he has 17 axes. Like, some things you can't delve into too deeply, even for us.
So we have we're at the 90-minute mark. We get a 1 minute of stoppage time. And this is it. 1 minute of time added to Richmond's miracle season. Come on, put your foot on it. The Greyhounds are running out of time and ideas. Everybody is cheering them on. They have one miracle left. We see Tart completely boxed in. Finds Muttler bearing down on goal. Gets it over to Richard. Muttler is brought down. And Richmond have a free kick in a dangerous position. This is, you know, people are losing their minds. They know this is it. This is very common, by the way, at the end of a football match where you're like, okay, this is they just have to hit this. And then what's crazy is the great ones do. And you just cannot believe, especially if you've ever taken a kick like this, which I have, cause it's so much, you have to hit it perfect. It changes the nature of what this is changes. So let's say you're going to chip it and you're going to put it on someone's head. You have to chip it perfectly at the right level, knowing how fast the person runs. It's like throwing a long bomb in soccer, mm-hmm. except mm-hmm. you're using your foot. I mean, mm-hmm. I said soccer, in football, right. In NFL football or American football, you throw that long bomb. You're gauging, okay, wind speed, trajectory, right. You know, how much dip the ball, you know, what's the arc of the ball? How fast do I know that the receiver and catch it? What shoulder am I putting it over? Where's the defender going to be? How close to the sideline? Like, all of these factors mm-hmm. come into play. It's the same thing. And if it's a direct kick, you are saying, I have to curve it around the wall, but not too far so that the goalie doesn't have time to get a jump on it. And I mean, it's just like, it's just unbelievable. But everybody knows this is what's happening. Jake isn't even watching anymore.
One quick thing, and really quick, and we get... there are three empty beer bottles in front of where Jake was sitting and another one on the bar where he is presently sitting. I didn't really process that at any point before this very moment, but that, I mean, it's a whole game, or a whole match, so it's not like I think he's like fall down drunk, but I do think he needed a drink through this experience.
Yeah, he drinks George Thorogood, you know? He drinks alone. You know that reference? You know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
No. Oh, I drink alone. You know? Uh-uh. You know that song?
No.
Oh my god.
I got to go find the song.
Oh my god. All right, we'll put it on the thing. I drink alone. Yeah, with nobody else.
Yeah.
Okay.
No. All right. We'll put it on the music thread.
Must be white boy day.
That's funny. This is the difference between the three of us is that when you said he has three beers in front of him, I was like, oh, well, that seems normal. That's a normal amount. This is
funny.
What I am feeling a little bit like is in an episode of You're the Worst when Jimmy pretends for a split second that he is drunk in order to play a trick on Gretchen. And then immediately after she says, like, haha, I got you, he says, psych, I've only had 5 shots. I could land an airplane right now. So I guess maybe that's where I'm at. So I'm like, oh, 4 beers? Oh, so that's like a casual lunch. That's fine. I could land a plane. Oh, I could land a plane after 4 beers.
I could land a plane.
That's great.
Wow. Wow. All right, moving right along. They're trying to figure out what play they're coming up with. They call Nate. Nate, come on up here. And Jamie's trying to figure it out. Time's running out. What can the Greyhounds conjure here? And Ted just showing, like handing an Oscar to Nate. Jamie's trying to figure it out, or the ESPY. And what is he trying to do here? Okay, here we go.
I mean, it's a bit of stating the obvious, but I think you need it here, which is that moment is built only and purely through relationship. They had to go through all the things they had to go through to even be able to communicate what to do. Come on. Jamie does full on. And it's funny because you referenced that moment earlier, boss. But Jamie does a full-on version of Ted running across the field saying, I want the ball. Give me the ball. I mean, he does exactly what Ted tells him to do. Exactly. It's unbelievable. And Sam, who needs to be put back on defense where he belongs, finds the back of the net. Just beautiful. Yeah. I mean, that was barbecue sauce right there. That's the definition of barbecue sauce right there.
Yes, coach. Yes. This is the good shit.
Yeah, this was really well done. And look, this is really well done. Sorry, go ahead.
No, this is amazing. My favorite part of it is please. Pass me the ball, please.
Yes.
Like when he and listen, he's more than happy to play through me. He's more than happy to be a decoy. My God, it's like the happiest moment of his life if he can do this and free Sam of all people.
Think of all the things we just watched from the show and from the arcs. A play that was stuck in Nate's pocket that Coach and Beard had to do their, hey, I have a hard time hearing people who don't believe in themselves routine to get loose. Then they strut to get out to the field. Now we have Jamie, who first introduces this play, says, are you fucking joking? That's his whole response to his gaffer. Wait, who's he talking to? Are you fucking joking? And all this, right? And then Sam, who we meet, kicking the ball like shit and feeling terrible about himself and having to be told, be a goldfish, because he can't kick the ball from here to there anymore because he misses home. I mean, like, it's all the fucking things. So much story in this goofy little moment. And Bumbercatch, who I just adore.
You're 100% right, Coach. And they've done such a great job of building this moment up that we all know we can track those elements that play into this. And it is absolutely beautiful. It's so funny to see the celebration shots, which are just like Dr. Sharon on the bed and people hugging Trent. I mean, it's like out of control.
We're back to Nate jumping on Ted. I mean, but here's the thing too that I love, the 4 shots of the coaches. Nate didn't want a 4 shot. Nate was like, whoa.
Yeah.
If there's a new baby, then where do I fit in the family?
Right.
And no more. Look, I mean, it's, oh, God. Amazing.
I needed this. I really needed it. It was a beautiful moment. Absolutely beautiful moment. I was so, I'm such a sucker. It's so predictable.
I know. But even the celebration's amazing.
10 like, miles away. Yeah, it's Colin, it's like
Colin gets his kiss. They're telling Rebecca, look what you did. Look what you did. She's like, no, I didn't.
Yes.
He's like, no, yes, you did. Like, that's the beauty of this. I was at a reunion, you know, we talk all the time. I used to sing. So I was at a reunion for Shades. And it was an amazing thing that I'll tell you guys about at some other point when we haven't been talking for hours. And
that'll be never. There is never a period where we haven't been talking for hours.
Accurate. That is accurate. I said to one of the guys, you know, we were talking about a few different things, and I said to him, I said, that's the thing, the different groups I'm going to name now from Yale, where they were part of all this a cappella singing. I said, you can be a Dukesman, you can be a BD, as a group called the Bakers Dozen. I said, but you can't be a Shade. I said, once you join Shades, you are Shades. And Shades is you. You never, Shades would never be the same group if you wasn't in it, Greg. And it wouldn't be the same group if I was never in it. And we'll never be the same because we were a part of it. And that was, and I said, you can't be a Shade. You are Shades. Once you are in, you are in. You are Shades. And to me, that is part of the magic of this, is like, it really is everyone's victory. If Higgins doesn't stand up to Rebecca and go, fuck off, to everyone's shock, including his own, she never gets shaken completely off of her crazy,
yeah,
right, mission to destroy Rupert, right? And if Sassy, yes, like, all these things, Sassy, who she treated like crap, let's be real, finds out, uh-oh, she's going to be alone on that anniversary. Guess I better get down there. And so much unlocked through that. Keely, I mean, everybody has a part in this win.
Yes.
Everybody.
Yes, coach. Preach.
Fucking great. So
I love it.
Great.
I love it. And then
you get the best out of people this way. But anyway, sorry. You know, there's another thing I could do for 2 hours, but I'm not gonna do that to you, coach.
No, I was just saying, and then if it couldn't be any better, you get your final moment here, coach, of what's happened.
It's falling in love all over again. It's like seeing Daphne in her wedding dress. It's like no, really. Him doing the dance that he did in the locker room with the Wichita State Shockers. I shook my head. I like,
yeah.
Like, it was like the, like a late scene in a movie where you see like the wise old mentor watching the performance and going, I knew you had it in him. Like, I was like, I am so fucking proud of this show. God, you guys crushed this shit. But like that dance. Are you kidding me right now? Oh God, so fucking good.
Yeah, no, crazy. We see that everybody loses their mind, and then we fade to black. And with that, we are probably one episode away from the final deep dive podcast about Ted Lasso. Coach, where do people find you if they want to find you?
Check me out at We Align. That's wealign.alignp, as in line performance, .com. Come through in that open area where you're looking at everything from TED Talks to memes to GIFs to whatever, just sharing ideas and having conversations. And we're going to be doing a lot more to talk about the specifics about what Align does and how you can be taking advantage of it to help yourself get unstuck and on this path of living a life that is aligned to who you are, where you are, and where you want to go.
Love it. Coach, what about you?
No.
I mean, I said,
you said coach again.
Boss, what
if there are three coaches on this podcast, we're fucked. You can find me still on Twitter, although not as much, more on Blue Sky now. Recently tweeting about Doctor Who, and I will talk to you about that if you'd like. It's Dumbly_Chambers. And also posting a lot of shit in the community site, which there are links in the notes, and you can find out how to become a member of that. A lot of things that I need to post today and update, including the band that I love, doing a song for Bob's Burgers, a show that I love, about Thanksgiving, a holiday that I love. So it's one of my favorite things ever, and I will post that in there also.
Wonderful. Thanks to everyone for joining us today, for taking this journey with us. We've loved every single step of this. Thanks for all the support and the love and everybody communicating with us and supporting the show. If you're interested in becoming a subscriber and joining our online listener community, please, look at the show notes. There's always a link there. Support your local libraries and the written word. And until next time, we are
Richmond till we
die.
It's pretty good.
The TEDcast is a joint venture between Pajiba and The Antagonist. Visit us at pajiba.com and antagonistblog.com.